Every year, millions of Americans travel to the nation's capital. Some are there to see the sights. Others are there to work. The week before last, a group of around 100 Ohio Farm Bureau members were in Washington and got a lot of work done. Their big job was lobbying their lawmakers. But they also heard from the administrator of the U.S. EPA, the Speaker of the House, both Ohio senators, and more. Today, you're going to hear what they heard on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
For 72 years, Ohio Farm Bureau County presidents and state leaders have traveled to Washington, D.C. to put a face on the issues that affect our nation's food and farm system. They visit lawmakers in their offices, talk through the issues, and work to influence those elected officials. Along with that, they hear from high-ranking members of Congress and the administration. This year, in a very rare opportunity, Ohio Farm Bureau members and those from three other states had the chance to hear from Scott Pruitt, the administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Pruitt expected and got a very friendly reception. So friendly that Iowa Farm Bureau President Craig Hill, when he was introducing Pruitt, was interrupted by applause during the introduction. Twice. Pruitt opened his remarks by telling the farmers about his philosophy regarding how the Environmental Protection Agency should do its work.
It's been a busy first year. We've been active on a number of things. I want to emphasize a couple of areas in my comments that I think would be of help and benefit to you. Generally speaking, we've been about two primary things, regulatory certainty, and I'll unpack a couple of those areas, but also, as Craig mentioned, getting some changes in accountability on how we do business. And I'd like to start with the latter as opposed to the former just for a second, because I think the regulatory certainty and the regulatory reform efforts that we're engaged in gets a lot of attention, rightfully so, but there's not as much attention paid to the process and how we do business as an agency. And I'll start first with just simply attitude. You know, what we do from a regulatory perspective, like agencies across the federal government, there's an attitude on how you do things. There's an approach, there's a worldview, there's a perspective that's deployed in how you do your business. That's what you do, that's what business has, that's emblematic of regulatory agencies as well. And the attitude, frankly, until the president's election, until our arrival at the EPA, the attitude, I think, with respect to farmers and ranchers across this country, was competitive and adversarial as opposed to cooperative and a partnership. And I think that's wrong-headed. I think it's wrong-headed for someone to be leading the Environmental Protection Agency and look at farmers and ranchers across this country as anything other than a partner and a friend in achieving good outcomes for the environment. You are, and Craig said this, and I've said this a bunch of times, you are our first conservationist. You are our first environmentalist. The greatest asset you have is your land. You care about that, and your desire is to pass that on to future generations with stewardship principles that govern your decisions today. I get that. And we as an agency need to understand that that attitude should permeate how we do business. This idea that we as a country have to choose between jobs and growth and environmental protection is just simply a false choice. There are some that have preached a message for the last several years that though we've been blessed with tremendous natural resources, that we can feed the world and, in fact, are feeding the world, that we should keep those natural resources in the ground and have prohibition, government, put up fences and do not touch, is just simply not the right way to do business. The way we should do business as a country is recognize that God has blessed us with tremendous natural resources, and to whom much is given, much is required, and we have an obligation. And we have an obligation to use those natural resources for the benefit of mankind with stewardship mentality for future generations. That's the way we ought to approach these issues. So when I talk about process, just big picture initially, it is attitude driven. And I will say to you, I've hosted many of you at the agency. And I've had people, I've asked this question to them, how many of you, this is your first time to be at the EPA? The hands go up where they had not even been there before. Voices are being heard. Attitudes are being changed. Perspective is being altered. We're doing things the right way to partner with those folks across the country to achieve good environmental outcomes. We trust and look forward to working with you in that regard, and that's driving our processes.
You are listening to a speech by U.S. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, who spoke to Farm Bureau leaders from Ohio, Missouri, Iowa, and Alabama. They were in Washington, D.C. recently.
Now, as far as some of the changes that we're making on process itself, Craig made reference to that. One is we've gotten away from an abuse of the rulemaking process, because over the last several years, we've had an influx of what we call consent decrees, where the agency is sued by a third party, an NGO or what have you, and in the course of that litigation, There are changes made, there are decisions made, better put, to alter a statute or alter a timeline on a statute, substantive types of changes from what the statute requires, and then it's cabined within a consent decree. You know, it's sue and then settle, regulate through litigation, bypassing comment, bypassing the ability of stakeholders to make their voices heard, bypassing the responsibility of our agency to respond to comments on the record before we finalize decisions. The rulemaking process is good. Why is it good? Because we propose a rule, we hear from folks all over the country, we then inform ourselves about their perspectives, and then we make decisions based upon that input. That's how you build consensus. That's how you make wise decisions. That's why the rulemaking process matters. To bypass that entirely through something called sue and settle, through regulation, through litigation, cutting a deal or cutting an arrangement with one party to a lawsuit and then taking and applying it to the entire country is just simply wrong. We fixed that, to Craig's point, last year. We ended the practice. I ended the practice of sue and settle, and we're not engaged in that anymore. It's not just our agency, but we're looking at other agencies are also trying to adopt this. So it's going to make a difference in how we do rulemaking. So process matters. Process matters, not just with attitude, but also the granular aspects of how we do our work.
For farmers, no single issue drives home the difference between the Obama EPA and the Trump EPA than the WOTUS rule. WOTUS is the acronym for Waters of the United States. An Obama administration rule extended EPA control over water and thus over much farming. And that was a move that Farm Bureau and others considered illegal. Pruitt covered the WOTUS activity.
The WOTUS rule is something that the president, February 28th, early in the administration, the day he addressed a joint session of Congress, in the Roosevelt Room, he signed an executive order. And that executive order told me to get active at evaluating that WOTUS rule and to fix it, to rescind it and make a different approach. I'm here to tell you that I'd only been on the job. I was sworn in, as I recall, on February 17th. And we started working at that point. I told my team I wanted to be ready when the president issued that executive order for us to begin that process. And so I had actually documentation prepared in advance of him signing that executive order and was with him in the Roosevelt Room as he signed it. And within 8 minutes of him signing that executive order, we had begun the process to rescind that deficient rule of 2015, the Waters of the United States rule. It's going away. It wasn't done the right way the first time. We're fixing it, making sure that you have clarity. And as we go forward, you're going to have a new definition this year. In 2018, you're going to have a new definition. That definition is going to respect private property owners. It's going to respect the role of the states. It's going to respect Justice Scalia's opinion that he issued in the Rapanos decision. We're going to make sure that that Clean Water Act definition of what a water of the United States is takes into consideration and understands it never intended to be a puddle. It was never intended to be a puddle. It was never intended to be a dry creek bed. It was never intended to be a prairie pothole in North Dakota. It was never supposed to be an ephemeral drainage ditch in Utah. That's not going to be the groundwater and the rest. All those things are going to be addressed. And they're going to be addressed with clarity and confidence so that you know where federal jurisdiction begins and ends. And that's coming in 2018. That's important because people shouldn't have to guess as they use their land. And let's be clear with this. Land use decisions, not just for farmers and ranchers, all land use decisions were impacted by that rule in 2015. When you define water of the United States so broadly, you stretch it so far that it's unrecognizable to what the writers of the Clean Water Act intended, it literally impacted every land use decision across the country. And so it is so important that we provide clarity there so that you and others can make decisions on where federal jurisdiction begins and ends. Because otherwise you're facing what? The prospects of someone coming in years later and saying, you should have got a permit, and here are the fines that you're going to have to pay for each of those days that you didn't have a permit in place. So this is something that we have to get right, are going to get right, and it's coming, as I indicated, in 2018.
As EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt wrapped up his visit with the Farm Bureau members, Ohio's Farm Bureau President Frank Burkett closed out the session.
As a country, we have to ask and answer the question, what do we believe true environmentalism is? Is it prohibition or is it stewardship? I believe the American people are on the side of stewardship. I believe the American people believe that we have responsibilities to the environment from stewardship, but also to use those things that we've been blessed with to serve fellow mankind, both in how we power the world and also how we feed the world.
Well, thank you, Administrator Pruitt, for recognizing that we can have agricultural production and environmental stewardship exist hand in hand. I'd also like to extend a welcome and a thank you to each and every one of you for joining us today. You recognize the importance of your Farm Bureau at every level, starting at the county level with the grassroots of your organization, with a strong local county Farm Bureau, a strong state Farm Bureau, and you have pledged somewhere between 2 and 3, 4 days maybe of your time to strengthen the grassroots involvement of your American Farm Bureau.
The president of the American Farm Bureau agrees with Ohio President Burkett. AFBF President Zippy Duvall attended a part of the Ohio function, and he spoke with me about the importance of farmers coming to the Capitol to lobby their elected officials.
You know, it's important for our farmers to come to town to, they say the same thing about the policy that we're pumping every day with our staff up on the Hill. And when they come to town and they're the constituents of these congressmen and senators, they come to town and they just basically pave the road for us in our policy movement. And it makes us fulfill our mission of pushing our policy. You know, our policy comes from our farmers, and when they come to town, They actually get the actual work done when they come to town. So it's real important. Without their visits, we would never be able to accomplish all that we accomplish.
I get the sense that compared to the last number of years, farmers feel a little bit more comfortable that some of their issues are being heard. Administrator Pruitt came and visited. I told my friends it's the only time in my career that I've heard the introduction get interrupted by applause twice.
Exactly. Especially for EPA director, administrator.
But there's this sense, I think, that farmers feel that there's a receptive ear to their concerns.
It is, and this administration says a lot of things that we believe in. Of course, a lot of things that he talks about makes us a little nervous, of course. But, you know, if they weren't talking about our issues, we'd be upset. So now they're talking about them, we just got to be at the table and make sure that we make a difference. And the people coming to town helps us make a difference.
Are you comfortable that agriculture has the advocates necessary in the president's cabinet inner circle to make our case?
Well, there's always some concern there, but we think now we have better advocates there now than we've had in the past. So we're real excited about the lead-ins we have to the president and the opportunity to pump our policy there.
American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall. We'll have more of the Ohio Farm Bureau trip to D.C. right after this. One of the high-level officials who met with Ohio Farm Bureau County presidents in Washington recently was Ted McKinney, Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Affairs at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's a relatively new job at USDA, and a big part is to promote the sale of American farm goods to foreign customers. McKinney talks about two crucial pieces of being able to make the sale: personal relationships and quality products.
I was right with the secretary when he said, we got to get out of town and start working with our customers. So since I took office, I was sworn in on October 10. Let me see. We've been to India twice. We've been to Colombia, Brazil, Panama, Japan, Mexico. Have talked with the Canadians and so many other countries. Probably been to 6-7 embassies. And let me just tell you, and you know this, but let me remind you, if you wondered whether showing up makes a difference, the answer is absolutely, unequivocally, yes. There are problems we resolve by sitting across the table and always, always respectfully and diplomatically raising those. But when you can make your case personally, it makes a difference. And that's something that we in agriculture know so well. It's you and your neighbor talking across a fence post or at the coffee shop or wherever it might be. So that's point one. Showing up makes a difference. Point two, if you ever wondered whether quality of U.S. products, and I mean commodity items all the way through a packaged, processed good, of all types, livestock, poultry, crops, fruits, vegetables, anything, if you ever wondered whether the quality and reputation of a product makes a difference, I'll tell you once again, absolutely and unequivocally, yes. I've been to the Costcos of Colombia and Brazil, same in Dubai. I've been to smaller supermarkets. I was in it in last week. I was in Japan at a fairly narrow store where they're selling the heck out of U.S. beef in essentially a stand-up cafe. You go in, order a steak, you can get some rice or green beans or something, and man, are they moving volume. And they want nothing but U.S. products. Why? The quality is never in doubt. The real and perceived safety is there. So remember, there are safety issues out there. You remember the melamine issue in China with milk and tainting of milk. That kind of thing continues to be pervasive, not just from China, but other countries as well. And the U.S. brand makes a lot of difference.
There was an elephant in the room as the farmers politely listened to Mr. McKinney. And that is that President Trump is making farmers nervous over his stance on trade agreements that have been exceptionally beneficial to farmers. One of those is the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada, better known as NAFTA.
I'm fairly bullish on NAFTA. I think we're going to get there. I was in Mexico City. I met with the Minister of Ag. I met with Economía, which would be their counterpart to USTR. It was very friendly. And the issues they raised, I just anticipate. I don't know. I'll remind you and the media, I am not the negotiator. That's USTR. But it was a very positive discussion, and I think very positively we're going to get there with our friends in Mexico. Don't know when. I hope it's before their elections, because we would like to have this done in the current Congress. Who knows what will come? But I'm bullish on that. I think Canada's going to come along. They've been much more difficult. They've spent much, much more of their time on a PR campaign than they have seriously negotiating. And I have reminded them not once, not twice, but three times, please do not put at the feet of our president your frustrations with NAFTA. You started with this with Class 7 milk. They created a new class of milk, effectively shutting out U.S. milk, allowing them to take all their dry milk powder and dump it on the world markets. Don't tell me where this frustration started. So I think they're going to get there because we have to. The three of us have to come together. And I don't know if it's going to be a one-step approach where the U.S. and Mexico come together and then Canada comes along, or if it's a tripartite, but I do think we're going to get there.
Ohio farmers have also developed good markets for their products in China, which again, President Trump has chosen to challenge on trade issues.
China's a different story. I know how much of our soybeans go to China. But the president, with a lot of data behind that, has recognized that China has been, shall we say, not playing by the rules. When you continue to ramp up steel production when the world is already glutted, when you have 10 biotech traits waiting there as long as they have, four or five of them now in the multi-year phase, and then complain about weed seeds in your soybeans, this is rampant across. Theft, when I was at Dow AgroSciences, one of my colleagues in R&D, he's now in jail, it was proven that he was shipping intellectual property there, not 20 miles away from Indianapolis, a good feed company. Was moving feed into enzymes because it helps with digestion of animals. You know that. They pulled the guy off the plane. Right there were all the enzyme formulations. This is happening across industry after industry after industry after industry. So it's not a surprise that Qualcomm's attended acquisition was stopped. Probably a good thing. So the president and the entire cabinet are looking very seriously at China. Now, I get on my knees morning and night, and I hope and pray that President Xi and his team will recognize what they have, not what they don't have. It is a very strong relationship. We send quality soybeans, quality DDGs. I hope we can send a whole lot more ethanol as they work hard to clean up their air, which they do want to do and need to do. China is an incredible market. We have lots of friendships. Our friends with soybeans and other industries have cultivated very long, enduring friendships. But there are bigger issues at play, and that is fair play under WTO or even just under the Golden Rule. And I think those are about to be addressed.
USDA Undersecretary Ted McKinney talking with Farm Bureau members in Washington. We are back with coverage of the 72nd annual Ohio Farm Bureau County President's trip to Washington, D.C. You're hearing some of the key speakers that farmers heard from during that three-day event. A few minutes ago, we heard an administration official talking to farmers about an uncomfortable issue, the fact that farmers are concerned over some of President Trump's actions on the trade front. During a news conference with Ohio reporters who were also on the trip, Ohio's senior senator, Sherrod Brown, talked about his views on our current trade disputes.
I start with NAFTA, or with renegotiation of NAFTA. I want to fix the industrial sides of NAFTA. I think the ag side of NAFTA has worked well for farmers in Ohio and elsewhere. And I don't subscribe to the theory that trade agreements play off auto workers against farmers. I just don't think that we turn one segment of our economy against another. I mean, one out of seven jobs in Ohio is ag-related, food and ag-related, and a lot of jobs are manufacturing. And I think this, there's plenty of room. A lot of extraction's a third job. I mean, you make stuff, you grow stuff, and you extract stuff, and we mine stuff, and we do all three of those pretty well in Ohio. So I don't want to disturb that. Steel tariffs and the president's choice of the term trade war is not helpful. And I don't think he's used that since the first couple of tweets about it. I hope he hasn't. I hope he won't. And I know people in administration don't want him to either. But these are trade enforcement actions, and we've done that throughout our history. I'll work with the administration to make sure, as I do on this issue, and I was publicly supportive of the steel tariffs. There weren't a lot of members of Congress in either party that were. I think they were the right thing. I didn't think he did them quite the right way. They should have been more about China and less about Canada. But I know that there are threats of blowback. There always are. But I will fight against any of those kinds of threats. I spoke with the Canadian foreign minister the other day about keeping this in a way that works for both countries, and I think it will, and especially on ag.
Brown is the first Ohioan in some 50 years to sit on the Senate Ag Committee. He and his colleagues are now writing the 2018 Farm Bill, which has two major portions, farm programs and nutrition.
We've got a really good coalition because of the nutrition title and the farm programs title, whether it's conservation, whether it's rural development, whether it's safety net issues. And we need to keep that coalition together. And I think that's worked for agriculture. It's worked for hungry kids in Appalachia and in the cities.
Brown spoke specifically about the SNAP program, what we used to call food stamps, and the demand on Farm Bill resources for that program.
There has been a drop in the number of people that are using SNAP, that are using food stamps. As the economy, we've had economic growth. We've had job growth every month since 2010, since we did the auto rescue. And we've seen wages fairly flat, going up a little bit, now flat again mostly. But as the economy grows, we're seeing fewer people that come in for that need SNAP. that's the good news. The bad news is there are an awful lot of people, I hear this from food bank people all the time, there's an awful lot of people that come into their food banks or they know that they help sign up for SNAP who are working full-time jobs. They're working and making $10 and $12 an hour and have two kids.
Senator Brown was asked about the political climate in Washington and whether that would affect their ability to get a farm bill written.
We don't let that tone creep into the Agriculture Committee. I mean, fundamentally, we have seen this committee continue to work the way that it should. So I think that will continue, and I think all of us, and I can't speak for my Democratic colleagues, but I think they all follow this mostly the same template of reaching out on that committee.
Looking at other potential pieces for the farm bill, the senator says he thinks helping rural America close the digital divide will be an important task.
I think rural development is even more important than it was 5 years ago. You still hear too many stories of, as I talked to a young woman, a girl, an eighth grader, I think ninth grader in, I think, Jackson County, a few years ago, who said that when she does her homework, she goes to her grandmother's because it's on the top of the hill and she lives in a valley and she can't get broadband from her house.
Brown wants the farm bill to find balance between profitable farming and protecting Lake Erie and other water resources.
It's how do we preserve the best farmland, and how do we get young farmers able to farm, but at the same time, how do we do conservation in those lands? And so does that mean providing some dollars to widen the filter strips from 30 feet to 70 feet, whatever, on the creeks leading into the Blanchard, leading into the Maumee? So I think it's sort of balancing all that.
Senator Sherrod Brown and a few of his comments made during a news conference with members of the Ohio media. They were along with the County Farm Bureau presidents in D.C. Senator Brown, always generous with his time, and he's a regular speaker at that Farm Bureau trip. So too is Ohio's other Senator, Rob Portman, who we're going to hear from next on Town Hall Ohio. By the way, Senator Portman was presented with the American Farm Bureau's highest honor for a sitting elected official, the Golden Plow Award. About that award, Ohio Farm Bureau President Frank Burkett said that Senator Portman has always been an advocate for Ohio's farmers. His leadership on issues such as regulatory reform is appreciated and valued, and when Farm Bureau members need to talk, Senator Portman is always ready to listen. You'll get a chance to listen to Senator Portman when we continue coverage of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation's 72nd County President's trip into Washington. I'm Joe Corneli, inviting you to stick around for more Town Hall Ohio coming up right after this. We are back with coverage of the Farm Bureau County President's visit to Washington, where one of the speakers was Senator Rob Portman. The senator talked about tax reform, labor issues, drug problems, and began with regulatory reform.
It's just common sense legislation. And it says, let's have some transparency here on regulations. Let's be sure that all the agencies and departments go through a cost-benefit analysis. It codifies all the existing executive orders out there, too, which is good for certainty for agriculture. By the way, the administration has also done a good job on regulations over and above what we've done in Congress. The key is to have at the top, the right attitude that then gets shifted down through the culture of the organization. So if you have a culture that says, we're not going to say to farmers and ranchers and small businesses, aha, we got you. We're going to penalize you for not complying. Instead, you say, hey, here's the rules. There's got to be some rules and regulations. We all get that. How can we help you to comply with these? How can we partner with you? And I think that's the big sea change here. Every agency and department now is looking at this differently, including the Department of Agriculture. I think Sonny Perdue is doing a good job. And that's part of his culture, right? How do you help people to be able to get through the federal maze? Limit it and simplify it as much as you can, but then a wholly different approach. And specifically, I think the Department of Agriculture, what they're saying is, if you want to put out a new regulation, find two to get rid of. That's the kind of culture. So I'm excited about that. That's a big change. And people talk about what's going on in the economy. I do think a lot of it is related to the tax bill. And as you know, I'm on that committee. I was on the small committee that negotiated it. I ended up being the go-between with the House on it. And I'm really happy about what we did on pass-throughs. I hope you guys are finding that you got a little more money in your pocket to be able to invest in your farms and maybe hire somebody do a little bit more with 4-H or whatever it is you're doing in the community, because I think this is really a big part of what you see on the increased economic growth. But the regulations are also important, and that's sort of a less tangible one. It's harder to figure out exactly what the impact is, but both are helping. I will say, with the regulatory changes and with the tax law changes, we've got a new issue. Not a new issue, but an issue that's even growing more in farm country, and that is workers. And so as the economy begins to take off a little bit, if we get to 3% growth this year instead of 1.5% growth, that's a great thing. But it does, I'm not telling you anything you don't know much better than me, but it does create a real problem for you, doesn't it? It's tough to find people. And so part of the answer to that is immigration. We've got to be sure we have, you know, an H-2B program that works, and some of you are involved in that. A lot of landscapers are in Ohio. We're trying to work with them on that. And I think eventually immigration reform, you know, will improve that. But in the shorter term, there's some things we have to do in terms of getting our workforce up and trained and, you know, ready to help. And one of the sad realities in America today, and again, the Farm Bureau has been very involved in this issue, is that we got a lot of people who are not even in the workforce. And this is not typical. You'd have to go back to the late 1970s. And there aren't anybody in this room old enough to remember that except me here, but double-digit unemployment, double-digit interest rates, you know, double-digit everything, inflation, to find a time when there are as many people who are not involved in the workforce. In other words, the percentage of Americans who are actually working. That's pretty scary. The economists call it the labor force participation rate. So when you heard the news on Friday that the economy's growing, we've, you know, added 313,000 new jobs, unemployment's at 4.1%, it's about 4.7% in Ohio. Those aren't the right numbers. The real unemployment rate in Ohio is about 9%. Nationally, it's about 8.6%. Why do I say that? Because you just go back to the labor force participation rate, the historical one. Just go back to 2007, and you compare it to today. What's happened is there's millions of Americans who aren't even applying for unemployment or in that system because they just aren't working. They aren't even looking for work. And that will really help. I mean, there are 9 million men between the ages of 24 and 55 who are able-bodied, who are in this group. And wouldn't it be great to have access to that workforce? And that would make a huge difference right now in our economy, and particularly, you know, in sectors like construction and agriculture, we need those people. And you're willing to train them up, I imagine. You know, I mean, that's it'd be helpful to have people who are trained and know how to drive a tractor, or mechanics that know how to work equipment, but you're willing to train them up probably, but they just aren't there. So I think that's one of our great challenges, and I say that Farm Bureau's involved in this. They're involved in a number of ways on worker retraining, but also one I want to just raise at the end here very specifically, and that is this opioid crisis. And we talked a lot about this, and you guys got out front on it through 4-H and through just, you know, your communications. I get your newsletter every month, and you guys talk about it, and your magazines and so on. But we've got to fix this problem. Let me give you two statistics recently came out. One is from Brookings Institute, this guy named Kruger, who is the economic council head under Obama. He says he's done this research. 47% of these men I talked about, the 9 million men, 47% of them take a pain medication daily. And when he pushes on that, how many are prescription medications, it ends up that over 30% of the men in that group take a prescription pain medication daily. And I'm just telling you, this opioid thing has gripped our state much worse than most states.
We'll be back right after this. One of the highlights for Ohio farmers on the County Farm Bureau President's trip into Washington was a drop-in visit from the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. He's come to see the Ohio group since before he even became Speaker.
Great to see you all. How many of you have been on this trip before? So great to see you again. Buy Wisconsin cheese. All right. And Ohio cheese. Do they make cheese in Ohio? No, I'm just messing with you. I'm just messing with you. So I'm corn, beans, and cows. Very similar to Ohio. I went to college in Ohio, so I know the state quite well. Got a lot of good friends there.
During a question and answer session with the Farm Bureau members, the speaker was asked about what happened to the promise to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare.
As you probably know, the House passed the bill. We got it done. It went over to the Senate, and one guy did this instead of that. because of that one vote in the Senate, it dashed our ability to pass our bill to repeal and replace the ACA. And just so you know, the bill that we had passed would have done tremendous good for independent businesses, for small businesses, for farmers and ranchers. I won't go into all that it would have done, but it would have done so much to lower premiums, and we knew this for a fact. So when the Senate failed to pass the bill that the House did pass, we decided to go with an incremental approach. So first, in the tax reform bill, we got rid of the individual mandate. So at least we struck out this very costly tax increase on people that was making you buy something you couldn't afford or didn't want. Then in the CAP agreement, which got our baseline set for the farm bill and got our military funded, we got rid of this thing called the Independent Payment Advisory Board. That was basically the price-controlling body that Obamacare put in place to drive us toward a government-run, price-controlled system. So we've gotten two good incremental wins there. Now we're working on a reinsurance risk pool bill, which we're trying to get passed this spring. What that means is, by having a risk insurance system, in Wisconsin we had a risk pool, some states do risk reinsurance. A person gets a catastrophic illness like cancer, the reinsurance pool kicks in, covers those extra costs so that the insurance you buy does not have to cover catastrophic illnesses. That alone will double-digit drop your premiums. So we're trying to go at this in an incremental stage to get this bill passed in pieces because we couldn't get the big thing done because one guy did this instead of that. So right now is the reinsurance thing. If we can get this passed, something that we're for, it was part of our bill, we believe by October we could get a double-digit drop in premiums. So we're going through doing this in an incremental way. And the question is, in this case, the Democrats can filibuster this. So we're trying to see if we can get 60 votes, which requires 9 Democrats to support a risk reinsurance system. And it should not be partisan, and we're hoping it's not, because we know you'll bring peace of mind to people with catastrophic illnesses. In Wisconsin, 10% of Wisconsinites in the individual market who had a catastrophic illness like cancer, they got their insurance in our risk pool. They got lower premiums, lower deductibles, better copays, and could go to any doctor and hospital in Wisconsin they wanted. They got all of that, which was better than Obamacare today. So the law that was supposed to help the person with catastrophic illness, they had a better deal before Obamacare in Wisconsin. And the other 90% of the people in our state, in the individual market, mostly farmers, they had much lower premiums because the insurance they bought did not have to cover catastrophic illnesses. So we have proven this concept over and over again, and that's our last installment on our incremental approach to trying and repealing and replacing.
And as was the case with many of their visitors, farmers wanted to know where things stand with the Trump administration's move in the trade arena, moves that could harm agriculture.
Yeah, I worry about it. So, I mean, the president knows how I feel. I've spoken to him at great length a number of times. I believe the smarter approach is to go surgically after the cheating and the unfair trade practices in steel and aluminum, which does occur. It's pretty much China. They dump and then they ship it to another country to try and cover their tracks. So we're saying let's go after China for cheating on steel and aluminum without raising all these tariffs across the board, which, I mean, just think of what you guys buy. I mean, you know how much steel and aluminum is in a combine or a Case Magnum? That will be a price increase on us on the front end. But the bigger concern is the retaliation. The retaliation from Europe, the retaliation from other countries. And that is something that we should be concerned about. And where we typically get retaliated against is in agriculture. And that's why I don't think it's a good path to go down.
Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, Senators Sherrod Brown and Rob Portman, Ag Undersecretary Ted McKinney, and the Administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Scott Pruitt. A very impressive lineup of speakers who were with farmers in Washington. But the ones I was most impressed with, the County Farm Bureau presidents from Ohio, who represented their state quite well during 3 days in the nation's capital.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.